Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and views of our callers. If you're out there across America, why, I would love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us Kevin DeMeritt from Lear Financial, and I've asked him to come on and just talk about what's going on in our country today, because we are really facing very, very difficult times. The average American doesn't realize it. He looks at the Dow Jones average and he says, gee, things aren't too bad. It's a little about 10,000, goes up a little, occasionally gets down below that, then it comes right back up again, and we keep hearing how good our corporate profits are. Of course, still most of our stocks are in the 20 to 30 to 1 price earnings ratio, but earnings are better than they were, and they keep telling us about all the new jobs there are, but trouble is that most of them aren't full-time jobs. We, of course, hear about, our debt. What most people don't know is that the Chinese and the Japanese have been buying about $1.7 billion a day in American debt just to keep this country afloat, and they've quit buying it, which means that the Federal Reserve System has to create money out of nothing to buy debt. Now, the Prime Minister of Malaysia recently gave a speech pleading with Japan to stop financing America, to force us to be fiscally responsible, to stop supporting the dollar, and he has suggested that the Japanese yen become the reserve currency of the East, of Asia, and putting pressure on the Japanese to take over financial leadership, because they can't trust America anymore. And how is this all going to play out here in the United States? Well, Kevin, as we look and see what's happening financially, I think we're moving towards what Jim Poplava refers to as the perfect storm, with all the various indicators coming together at one time to create what I fear will be a cataclysmic event. How do you feel?
Well, I really do. There's a lot of debt out there. There's been a couple of articles talking about the net not being really $7 trillion, but much, much more than that. Matter of fact, in some testimony with Ken Smetters of the University of Pennsylvania, he was saying that the actual debt is $44 trillion, not the much lower figure that the national media is talking about. And also the American Enterprise Institution, along with the University of Pennsylvania, found that the real imbalance in this country was $7 trillion for the Social Security, $38 trillion for the Medicare health program. So these numbers are much, much larger than people look at when they're looking at the government, and they're looking at that $7 trillion number.
Well, that's because, of course, for many, many years, instead of putting the money into a trust fund for Social Security and Medicare, they've simply spent that, and they put an IOU in there. They say, oh, well, this is a trust fund, it's got government bonds, but where's the money coming from? Well, there isn't any money there, and of course, what most people don't understand is the federal government doesn't have any money. The only money it has is what it takes from us by force, what it can do by borrowing from future generations, or by printing money and inflating the money supply and destroying the savings of the middle class. So we are faced with these massive obligations. We've told older people, oh, we're going to provide for you, we're from the government, we're here to help. And here in a few years, they're going to run out of money, and this is where that $44 trillion comes from. The whole worth of, the United States in property and corporations, is, $12, $15 trillion. Where is the money going to come from? What's going to happen as we look down the line, Kevin?
Well, I think it's a little bit scary. To put this into perspective for people, if you take the number $44 trillion, you're looking at 350%. Of gross domestic product. That's all of the services and provided in an entire year, the manufacturing and the services provided for the entire United States. You would have to take the federal deficit and take 3.5 years if we paid everything that we made and everything that we manufactured into the debt. That's the kind of number that we're looking at here. And debt can be handled in a couple of ways. You earn enough money to pay it off. We know the government isn't going to do that. You can default. We hope that it doesn't do that. You can borrow even more, and that's exactly what they're doing right now, and pray for inflation so you can earn more dollars but pay back less, which is what we're coming into at this point and the reason that Alan Greenspan is raising interest rates. So number three and number four, borrow more money and pray for inflation, is exactly where we are right now. And people and investors need to understand that to make some preparations.
Well, people talk about monetizing debt. Could you explain what they mean when they say we're going to monetize the debt?
Monetizing the debt, issuing the bonds?
No, well, basically I was going to get into one way that you pay off debt is you monetize it. In other words, you just keep printing more and more and more money. You destroy the value of the money so that instead of paying back a dollar that's worth a dollar, you pay back a dollar that's worth 50 cents, 25 cents. And that way you can pay off the pension funds you've guaranteed. You can pay off the annuities and the CDs and the bank savings and all of the things you promised, but you pay them off with more or less worthless dollars. And that's how you do away with massive debt. The governments have done this before. And it's a convenient way. And they say, well, it's not our fault. You're getting a dollar. The trouble is a dollar has almost no purchasing value. And they have just had some really scary figures here in the last, 4 or 5 or 6 weeks. A massive increase in, I think, something like $150 billion increase in the money supply.
That's right.
Over the last, 4 or 5 weeks?
Yeah, about 5 weeks. And that's really what we're talking about when they're praying for inflation. If you print up more money and continue to do that, then the dollars that are out there are worth less. So you basically are praying for inflation so you can print more money and pay back with less valued dollars. And that's exactly what's happening right now. And again, why Alan Greenspan is talking about raising interest rates and then talking even stronger about raising interest rates just these last few days as other countries like New Zealand and a couple of other countries out there raised interest rates just lately, trying to pull back that inflation a little bit. But this debt problem is a huge problem on both sides of the equation, not only the federal government, but also on the consumer side.
All right, fine. Well, I think that one of the most important things to recognize is the fact that if you start to raise interest rates to control inflation, then you get into another problem, and that is you begin to slow down industry, you begin to slow down borrowing, you tend to slow down the housing market. And of course, all of these things really are not that healthy. I'm really concerned, and I think Alan Greenspan is as well, that if he raises interest rates too rapidly, he could simply dump the entire economy.
Well, he really could. He's on a tight wire right now. He needs to raise interest rates just enough to slow down inflation a little bit. But if he raises them too much, then the real estate market, the stock market, the bond market collapse, and then you've got a new set of problems, and you have interest rates so low at this point that where do you go with them? You go the way of Japan, lowering interest rates to 0%, having an inflation rate of about 2.5-3% by the government numbers anyway, and you've got negative real interest rates. You're giving money away, and it's costing you money to do it, and you end up with what you were talking about, the inflation side of the equation. So it's a very tight rope out there. It's going to be very interesting over this next year, and especially after the elections, just to see what happens in the economy as whoever gets elected out there takes the election, and Alan Greenspan gets a little bit more of a free hand to do what he needs to do.
Well, you know, the thing is that you ordinarily raise inflation rates when you want to slow down a very, very hot economy, a very prosperous economy, when, of course, everybody is buying much more than they should. But the trouble is, if you look at, say, at the car market, I mean, they're offering you zero down, zero interest for 6 or 8 years. Please buy our car. I see some SUVs, they're discounting them $6,000. So people are not buying cars frantically. They're certainly buying houses, but they're not buying cars. I know that lots of places like Home Depot or Lowe's sometimes will say, you know, just come in, nothing down, and no interest for, and no payments for a year. So obviously the economy is really not that good. It's only the very low interest rates and all these special incentives that are getting people to buy things. and then you raise interest rates on top of a weak and faltering economy, you could have real problems, I think.
Well, I think you could, and I think some of those things will show up when it becomes a reality in June. The thing that I'm really concerned about, Stan, is that the fact that people are on the sidelines concerned about hearing these interest rates are going up and then going out and buying everything that they can to try to lock in interest rates, especially in the real estate market. I think you can go through maybe one, two, or three rate increases if he doesn't do them too quickly, and people are going to come out of the woodwork to try to lock in those rates and, you know, just accumulate more and more debt. But last year we had personal income increase 2% and individual in debt increased about 10%. So we have never seen this where the interest rates have come down, we're pulling ourselves out of this recession through debt, and the debt has actually been increased. Matter of fact, despite these huge mortgage financing activity that we've seen through 2001 all the way up until now, the consumer finds himself a lot more indebted than ever before. In other words, this household debt has actually increased, which is a fairly astonishing fact. It's supposed to go down when interest rates come down and the economy is slow. But these consumers have traded in home equity for some extra pocket change, which has helped this economy in the short term. But in the long term, I think this higher debt load is going to weigh on the economy and spending and therefore economic growth going forward, possibly into 2005 as interest rates come up.
One of the things that really disturbs me is right now, you know, when it used to be when you went out to buy a house, you had to have a considerable down payment, maybe 20-30%, or at least 10% of the value of the house before you bought the house. Now they're actually lending you 100% of the value of the house, so you don't have to put anything down, and we're having people who are in no position at all to buy houses, buying houses, and of course it's all with loan money. And, of course, that's not so bad. You get a fairly low interest rate right at the present time. But when you get to the point where, of course, they've got to renegotiate that interest rate down the line a year, two, 3 years from now, and suddenly you're going to have to pay twice as much as far as your monthly payments, or at least 50% more, I think an awful lot of the people are not going to be able to afford it, especially if the job market tightens and as we see the progressive lowering of wages here in the United States. Because actually we know here in California, for instance, the people who lost their jobs after the bubble burst, they got a new job, but it was paying about 40% of what they were getting before. Some people getting jobs paying 30%. So you've got a lot of debt out there and you lose your job, and you get a new job, chances are you're not going to get anywhere as near what you were getting before. And I think, I really fear more and more Americans have gotten themselves head over heels into debt, and they think they're going to be able to go bankrupt and get out from under that debt, but they're changing the bankruptcy laws. And I really fear for the average American who's played this game, has forgotten those basic concepts that you don't spend money you don't have. And no individual or no nation has ever spent itself into prosperity.
Well, that's absolutely right, and you brought up a great fact about these mortgages. I think we've seen the peak of this mortgage refinancing activity already passed. We've seen construction spending at a peak, and I think, the percentage of those people who own homes is now at a record 69%. Mortgage underwriting shows that about 5% of homeowners throughout 2003 couldn't even afford to buy the home. They just snuck through the system and got a home loan through maybe knowing somebody or whatever, and the other 5% could lose their home if just one spouse becomes unemployed. So debt is a major problem. I think it's going to be a larger problem as these rates start to rise. The other problem that I see, and we spoke about this on another program, is the sad fact remains that personal income growth, I think, is not going to happen because of job growth. Everybody's looking at these jobs that are coming up, and they're seeing 300 and some thousand jobs being created. But personal income remains under a huge amount of pressure right now as these higher value-added manufacturing jobs are exchanged for lower-paying part-time and service jobs. So America is losing manufacturing jobs paying $45,000 to $60,000 a year, and it needs about three new service jobs paying $15,000 to $20,000 a year to replace that one manufacturing job that was lost. That's a big concern. The jobs look great. It's just the pay that goes along with it isn't looking that great at all.
And, you know, the other thing that really bothers me is I don't believe the government statistics. I mean, the government says inflation is 4% a year. That's 4% a year. Well, you go down to the gas pump and you see what's happening to the price of gasoline. You go into the grocery store and see what's happening to the price of groceries. And then you figure out how they create that inflation rate. And, of course, they're simply lying to us. It's that old adage, you know, are you going to believe what the government tells you, or are you going to believe your lying eyes? And my inclination would be to believe my lying eyes, because I think the inflation rate, and I have this from very good sources, that even Alan Greenspan will admit it's about 8%, and some people say it's 9% or more. What they do is they simply cook the books. They say, well, gasoline's going up, so we're going to take that out of the equation, and food is going up, we're going to take that out of inflation, and we'll leave sugar in the inflation, though, and a couple of other things that are not going up. And, you know, they say that figures never lie, but liars can sure figure.
You're absolutely right. They just take bigger percentages on something that didn't go down and give smaller percentages on something that went up dramatically, and you get an inflation rate at 2.5%, 3%. And, you know, the other crazy statistic about these, or the numbers about these statistics, is they look at the quality of a car. Now, I don't know how you put a number on the quality of the car, but they take the quality of the car in consideration as the car is going up in value or costing us more money. So a better quality car, when they look at it as far as inflation terms are concerned, they say, well, it doesn't really cost any more. You've got a better quality car for your $40,000 that used to cost you $12,000. So I don't know exactly how they figure all of that up, but, you know, that fuzzy math that Bush was talking about must be being used quite extensively on the inflationary numbers at this point.
Well, I'm very, very concerned that we are heading into a real economic crisis. Now, I'm not an economic consultant, but I've been following things for 42 years, and I've seen this go through these cycles before. But I've never seen anything happening with so many factors coming together, and I really believe that they're keeping the market up artificially through the election because they don't want the people to be concerned. They really never want them to think or to be into question what's going on. And I think that you'll see, in fact, I know Jim Poplava, who's a very well-known international analyst, a financial analyst, and he will comment that when the market gets down below 10,000, just in the last hours before the markets close, in come all these orders from some obscure island that nobody's ever heard of, massive buying to prop the market up, and I think it's totally being manipulated. I think that almost everything is being manipulated because it's all about perception. It's how we look at what's happening economically rather than what's really happening economically. And, you know, my concern is what's going to happen after November, and everything to me would suggest that we're going to get in some real economic problems, and specifically our problems are going to deal with the dollar, which has already lost. What percent of its value has it lost so far, Kevin?
Well, yeah, I was just reading an article here. It's lost 82% of its value since 1934. It says 82%. I mean, you can find something between 82% and about 98% that we talked about a couple of days ago. But that's a lot of purchasing power to be lost over those years. And what people don't understand is that prior to, what was it, 34 or somewhere around there, the British sterling was the currency of choice. Now it's the American dollar. And this whole article is talking about the fact that no currency lasts very long if you start increasing debt an enormous rate. And that's where we have the U.S. dollar at this particular point. We're the biggest creditor nation in the world, and at some point somebody says the euro looks better, or the Chinese yuan or something looks better than the United States dollar. Then we have some real big problems. Then interest rates have to go through the roof, taxes have to go through the roof, and we've got some real problems. It's probably years off, but I don't know how many. We could probably count them on both of our hands.
Well, you know, at least the dollar compared with the euro, we're down about 40% over the last 3 or 4 years. Now, that, if you're going to Europe, why, that really hurts you as far as the cost of things over there is concerned. They have fairly stable price over at Europe, and they really haven't gone up for many years. And right now, they have a gold-backed currency. America doesn't have a gold-backed currency. In fact, there's nothing behind our currency other than people's confidence in the integrity and morality of our country. Well, we're going to be back here in just a minute with Kevin DeMeritt of Lear Financial, and we'll be talking about some of the things that people really are going to have to start thinking about at this time. We'll be back in just a minute here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this afternoon, or this evening, is Kevin DeMeritt from Lear Financial. And Kevin has got a lot of interesting things that he, of course, works in this field all the time and has lots of suggestions as to what people may want to do. Let's get to the suggestions when our listeners come back on, because right now people are our major audience on shortwave and on the various stations is listening to commercials. But we'll be back in just a few minutes with that. But, Kevin, you know, as we look at this, you know, when you look at the history of nations, any time a nation gets into financial problems, well, that nation eventually is destroyed. Now, certainly, if you look and see what's happening to our currency at the present time and compare it with other currencies, why the European currency is fairly stable. Certainly the Muslim countries are going into the gold dinar, which is gold-backed. There is talk about the Japanese yen becoming the currency, the stable currency of Europe. What would happen if the countries of this world should decide they're going to unload their dollars, since the dollar is falling so rapidly, that they really don't want them as their reserves, because most countries, most central banks, are holding large amounts of dollars. I mean, 70 or 80% of the reserves are dollars, but it's declining in value. The reason you hold a reserve currency is it's holding its value. And yet, of course, we are going to have almost three-quarters of a trillion-dollar debt this year. It took the United States from 1789, when we were established, to 1980 to accumulate $1 trillion in debt. In the year 2004, the government will admit to a $500 billion deficit. They probably will have to have extra money for the war in Iraq. And then, of course, it will be the money that they will steal from the Social Security and Medicare Trust Fund, probably another couple of $100 billion. We're talking probably close to three-quarters of a trillion-dollar deficit for the year 2004, fiscal year 2004. What happens if other countries begin to really question the stability of our currency?
Well, then they start to sell the currency back into the market and either purchase a different currency, purchase precious metals, or go back into their own currency, which is horrible for the United States economy. Because to try to combat that, Alan Greenspan would have to raise interest rates to try to support that dollar or continue to let it fall, which would cause incredible inflation. But we need, as you've brought up a couple of times in the different programs that we've done, about $1.6, $1.7 billion a day to support our national debt. If we can't get foreign investors to support that debt for us, then the government is left with no other choice than to raise taxes. And really put us in a bind, which wouldn't be good for the stock market, the real estate market, or any of the markets, really, and collapse the United States dollar even further. So, like I say, Alan Greenspan has a tightrope to walk right now to raise interest rates just enough to keep foreigners purchasing the dollar, but not enough to collapse the markets here in the United States. That's why I think it's going to be extremely interesting. Although, an article from Merrill Lynch, or an analyst from Merrill Lynch, Michael Harnett, which is a global strategist, expects the dollar to fall. Just today came out with his analysis of the dollar. He says he expects the dollar to fall somewhere between 10 and 15% over the next 6 to 10 months. Add that on to the 35 or 40% that the dollar has already fallen. Now, it's come up a little bit, but you add on another 10%, you're about the 45, 46% mark against the euro. You're starting to get into some dangerous territory, I believe, when the dollar's down that far.
All right, fine. Well, just hold that thought, and we're going to bring our other stations that are coming right back on to line right now. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening is Kevin DeMeritt from Lear Financial. And Kevin was saying that he was reading an article by an analyst from one of the major brokerage house, and they were talking about considering the dollar would fall. What was it, 10 to 15% over the next 6 to 8 months? What was the figure you used?
Yeah, he expects the dollar to fall 10 to 15% over the next 6 to 10 months, in part, he says, because he believes the Fed is not going to react and do what they said that they were going to do today and really push the interest rates up as high as maybe 1 to 1.25% by the end of the year. Now, they didn't say that, but that was most of the analysts believed through what Alan Greenspan was talking about or what the market expects. He doesn't believe that would be able to happen without collapsing the markets. So he believes there's going to be another 10 to 15% drop in the value of the dollar. A little bit more inflation that would cause, and the government or the Federal Reserve does not get its wish to slow down the economy. They just can't push up the interest rates as fast as they would like to slow down this growth, because they would collapse the other markets, the stocks, bonds, and real estate markets.
Well, I think we're in very, very difficult times. And how do you feel about investments in, say, silver? Do you think this is a good place to be invested, or do you think people should be in stocks, or where should they be invested?
Well, I think it's okay to be invested in some different areas and get some diversification. I think the number one area that we've spoken about was to get people to pay down some of this debt. If you want to be fiscally responsible right now with everything that's going on, go against the grain and start paying down some of the debt before these interest rates get out of hand. That would be the first thing that I would try to do. If you're going to purchase stocks, purchase companies with little or no debt that have been around at least 5 years and are profitable. I read this crazy article this morning talking about 92% of the S&P stocks were up this year. They haven't seen that number up that much of a percent since 1980. And the companies that did the best had the highest amount of debt and the lowest profitability. Go against the grain. Purchase the stocks that are making a little bit of money out there that have been around and are profitable with very little debt. I would purchase bonds on short-term maturities. The reason you want to do that is try to get them in maybe a 3-year, maximum 5-year maturity so that they roll over quicker. As interest rates go up, the value doesn't fall as much. As interest rates start to rise, you can stair-step up with the new higher interest rates. You can also do the same thing with 6-month and 1-year CDs, is just buy 6-month, 1-year, 1.5-year, and go out so that you stair-step up with the interest rates. And you bring up the silver market. I didn't like it at $8, but I like it here at $5.64 or so. I think that's a pretty good value on the silver markets. I like the gold market right now. It's $385. It's right where its support is right now, and I think you're going to be looking at $430 to $450 gold going into the election or immediately after the election, because they just won't be able to raise interest rates fast enough to slow down this inflation. So we think that a percentage should be in the gold and silver markets. Probably stay away from platinum, and palladium looks like a good buy at, you know, $240, $250 where it's trading at today. It was $1,100 2 years ago. And there's some good demand coming in behind it. So there's some great areas to play higher interest rates in the metals market for about 10 to 15% of your portfolio.
Now, you mentioned platinum. Stay away from platinum. Why would that be?
I don't like the platinum market because the auto industry has the opportunity to use platinum or palladium in their catalytic converters. And when palladium was $1,100 an ounce, you had platinum trading in the high 600, $680 to $700 an ounce. They retooled and went to platinum, got away from palladium. Palladium falls from 1,100 all the way down to where we are today, about $230, $240 an ounce to buy. And the platinum market's almost $800 an ounce. It was as high as $900 an ounce, and we're starting to see more reports from Johnson Matthey and some of the manufacturers out there talking about the auto industry starting to retool a little bit and going back to the palladium to save the difference. There's a big difference right now, and I think that difference right now of about $500 or so, $450, will be made up. So if you add $200 onto $250 palladium, and it takes a year, year and a half to get there, you still have got a tremendous return with very little risk, because it takes somewhere in the neighborhood of around $275 to $300 to pull palladium out of the ground, depending on if you're talking about the Russian or the South African mines.
Well, all right, fine. What do you think about people being in gold or silver mines?
I think it's a good idea. I think that the stocks got a little ahead of themselves. They pulled back recently, but I like the physical metal right now. I think that the stocks, the precious metals market will play catch up to where the stocks are still trading because they're a little bit high.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take a break here, and then, of course, when we get back, why, we're going to invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But there has never been in all history a nation that has gone on to a fiat money system with nothing behind their currency that has persisted, because the politicians are not responsible. They will always spend money so that they can get reelected, and eventually the currency collapses. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty and coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this evening is Kevin DeMeritt from Lear Financial. We're talking about what's happening in our society. And, of course, as I stipulated, my expertise is in one thing, and that is I've been watching this for a long period of time. I've watched all of the various markets. When I was young and foolish, I even played the commodity market, and I discovered something, and that is that you can make a small fortune in the commodity market if you start with a large fortune. Other than that, you certainly have no business, actually leveraging yourself, but there are certain investments that can be made that certainly will are beneficial to the individual. And when you see an economy in real trouble, when you see a currency being challenged by other countries throughout the world, and one of the major problems we have today is we've got about $1.25 billion Muslims who are furious with the United States. And of course, as Osama bin Laden said, the best way to attack the United States is financially. And so they're thinking of creating their own gold-backed currency. They're talking increasingly over in the Arab states about beginning to denominate the sale of oil, not in dollars as they've traditionally been, but in euros, or at least in a basket of currencies, and moving away from the dollar. And, of course, this would have a profound impact on the stability of our economic system, because the American dollar has been, well, since the end of the Second World War, the reserve currency of the world. And initially it was gold-backed, and then after 1971, it was backed by the integrity of the Nixon administration and subsequent administrations. And the Federal Reserve kept our spending in check, and the dollar was stable in relationship to other currencies in the world. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case any longer. Right now, we find that the dollar is down about between 35% and 40%, with the euro as it was about 2 or 3 years ago. And, of course, if Kevin is just saying that some of the experts out there are talking about another 10% to 15% drop somewhere in there. And if this were to happen, we'll imagine the implications of the dollar losing 50% of its purchasing value. Now you say, well, but the prices are not going up that rapidly. Well, if they're going up at 10% a year or 9% a year, it's not going to take very long before we are getting into a situation where the dollars that people have spent their whole life accumulating just aren't going to be worth much of anything. And this is the best way I know to destroy the middle class of a nation, and I believe we're well on the way to accomplishing that. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Kevin DeMeritt. We've got Tom calling in from Chicago. Tom, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I wanted to thank you so much for having Kevin on, and we thank God for you being on here in the Chicago market. Dr. Stan, you're such a breath of fresh air that we don't have in the Chicago area. We have the elitist media that controls all the thinking, and smut radio, including sports, and Tribune-owned company that gives us disseminates all disinformation. And we're so grateful for the fact that you're out there for us.
Well, and, thank you.
Mr. DeMeritt, I would like to ask you how it has been that the elite criminal bankers have been able to manipulate the price of gold. We all know that gold should be at least twice what it is right now in real value, but they play a shell game, and they've done it for many years, ever since the run-up in the gold prices in the early 80s.
Yeah, that's a very good question. There's many ways that they've done it, but I think one of the biggest ways that they've done it is through these hedge funds in creating enormous amounts of paper trades that have, every time the market's been going up, have been able to sell off these paper trades along with Barrick and some of the other largest mines out there. And that's why companies like Blanchard's is suing Barrick and other companies and some of the bullion bankers for trying to play this game with futures and options and without the physical metal itself. And they've done a very good job of it. Hopefully that will be unwound, and the truth will come out. Blanchard's doing a fantastic job of trying to get the truth out, and Gold Eagle and a lot of the other websites out there have done a great job to try to get this truth out.
I happen to be one of the people that really got burned buying gold close to its high and holding it. And I've been accumulating what little I can, having given up a beautiful job that I had made, like Dr. Stan was talking about. I was making in the $40,000 to $50,000 range, and I took a buyout, and I'm right at that 30% of making of what I used to make.
Yeah.
But my wife and I have been very wise in the way we've tried to conserve, but we have been trying to buy gold, but we're so afraid having the gold in a safety deposit box as opposed to having it on site. And also, if the crash does come, how are we able to use the Gold Eagles or Krugerrands or Maple Leafs or whatever we have?
How are you able to use them?
As far as barter, or what would it entail?
Well, you know, I got a lot of these questions around Y2K also, and what I simply told people is that the metals that you purchase are purchasing, if you look at it in reverse, if you had an ounce of gold and you wanted to purchase dollars, you would get $385 basically today for an ounce of gold. When gold starts to go up and it's $800 or $1,200, and Dr. Stan has brought up Jim at financialsense.com, which is a fantastic website. There's an article on there by Ned Schmidt talking about gold at $1,250 an ounce. Well, if that gold is or gets to $1,250 an ounce, you simply trade in an ounce of gold for $1,250 that you can go out and purchase whatever you need to at that specific point in time. And your gold is your currency now. So you're still going to turn...
What about all the fear that's put out there by so many of these gold trading companies that tell you if you don't buy gold that it has numismatic value, that the government will confiscate it?
Well, I think if they're pushing that, that's not the company that you should do business with. If they're allowing you to make your decision about the fact that do you believe that they would confiscate gold, well, that's a whole new story. I think that it has to be explained to people, but not pushed on people. If that's one of your concerns, you should diversify your portfolio. Personally, I think you should diversify your gold portfolio just like you would a stock portfolio or any other type of portfolio, and numismatics do have their place, but it depends on the goals that the individual investor has. You brought up American Eagles. We have a site, if Stan doesn't mind me giving it out, I'll give out a site. It's buygoldatcost.com. You cannot purchase gold any cheaper than that site because I literally purchase the gold as a primary dealer from the United States government, and I sell it at what it costs me. Now, I don't have to do anything other than the have the girls put it in a box and ship it out to you, but I would like to have clients like yourself that are consistent gold purchasers and have a professional broker sit down and talk to you, and that's why we sell the gold at cost initially. Now, you can go there at any time and purchase gold at cost. Anybody that's listening can go there right now, buygoldatcost.com, and buy American Eagles at exactly what it cost me to buy it from the United States government. So we want to start a relationship with people like yourself and hopefully build on it because we have good recommendations. And if those recommendations include numismatic issues, then so be it. But not everybody should own numismatic coins, because they might be more profitable or because they might be non-confiscatable. There better be a darn good reason that somebody puts them in your portfolio.
Okay, would you like to put out your telephone number or does people know how to get hold of you?
Sure. We also have our free gold investor's guide and an audio tape entitled Interest Rates and the Gold Boom Ahead. Again, this is all free of charge. Matter of fact, we charge normally $29. All you have to do is mention Dr. Stan, and we're going to get everything out at no obligation. The number is 1-800-214-8271. That's 1-800-214-8271, and that's a number that actually has live operators, so everybody can call right now and get their name and address down, and we'll get that information off tomorrow or the next day.
All right, anything else, Tom?
No, thank you so much for having Mr. DeMeritt on the air.
All right, thanks so much for calling. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, you know, my fear is we're entering into very uncertain times. Certainly a terrorist attack, a war, what's happening throughout the world, you know, is all of the countries are really head over heels in debt. I think that here in America, probably we have more debt per capita than any other country in the world, but most of the world is not really doing that well. There's fairly high unemployment rates in Europe. Unbelievably, there are 50 million people unemployed in China today. China's trying to find jobs for them. That's why they can, of course, produce things so cheaply, because they can get them to work so cheaply. But the problem with that is, as long as we have open borders, why our companies are simply moving to China, where they can get a good labor force and they don't have to pay workman's compensation or health insurance or disability insurance or any pension funds, and they can get people to work for $75 to $100 a month, and they're happy to do it. And those products come in here. They're good quality, many of them, or most of them, and of course they're so much cheaper than we can produce them here. But every time that happens, every company that leaves America, why there are more and more people either unemployed or moving down in the economic scale. And this is really what concerns me.
Well, it concerns me also. And again, it's those jobs, as Tom brought up, that it was a $45,000-$50,000 job that the government's talking about. These 300, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say 300,000 jobs were created. If the statistics is correct that we need three jobs to replace the money that was lost on that one manufacturing job, you need 300,000 jobs to replace 100,000 jobs. So, yes, some people are going back to work, but at what price are they paying?
Right. Well, let's go to Ron, who's calling from Oak Lawn, Illinois. Hi, Ron. Are you listening to us on shortwave, internet, or on the station there in Chicago?
Internet. What station are you on in Chicago?
WAUR 930.
Okay, good. I had a question. I was wondering if the guests would recommend any short-term bond funds or something that would invest in the euro or foreign currencies.
Well, I don't think it's a bad idea. I think things are going to get a little bit tricky out there because, like I said, New Zealand and a couple of other countries, I can't remember them off the top of my head because I was away this morning and I read it very quickly on the airplane. But countries are starting to raise interest rates. The United States is starting to raise interest rates, and that's going to make the currencies out there jump around a lot. So I don't think it's a bad idea. You can do the same thing, in my personal opinion, with some precious metals in your account. You're purchasing a currency. You're purchasing the real currency. I would put a little bit in the precious metals market now that it's pulled back from 430 to 385 and see what happens to these currencies. But, Merrill Lynch came out and said the dollar is going to drop another 10 or 15%. If you're in the euro and it does that, then you can pick up that 10 or 15%. So I don't think it's a horrible idea. There's a lot worse ideas in the stock market and the real estate market right now than that one. Just be a little bit cautious. Put a smaller percentage in that type of fund with the governments out there raising interest rates right now.
You know, it was interesting. I talked to my broker this morning on something else, and believe me, I'm not in the market, but I like to talk to him. He happens to be my next-door neighbor. But he was telling me that Warren Buffett has $41 billion in cash, and, of course, none of it's here in the United States. He's sitting off overseas. He won't tell anybody what currency it's going to be in. I suspect it's in euros or Swiss francs, something of the sort. But Warren Buffett, who's certainly one of the smartest investors in the world today, is a strong cash position. And, of course, we also know that he's gotten precious metals in the past as well. Okay, let's go to, Ron, did you have anything else to say? Yes, we lost Ron. Let's go to Bill, who's calling from Coeur d'Alene, Washington. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, I guess it is. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Wanted to ask a question. I missed part of the show, so I hope it hasn't been addressed. I believe in everything that you and your guests are talking about. The only thing that is disconcerting to me is the level of control, at least on a temporary basis, that they've had for years in controlling the prices of precious metals. It's obvious that they're doing what they're doing to the dollar, and the dollar is going down. But then you watch in the last couple of months silver go up to over $8 an ounce, and then they come in and they knock the market back down to virtually where it started at the beginning of the year through derivatives trading or however they do it. Same methods they use, I assume, to control the stock market.
Well, would you like to comment on that, Kevin?
Yes, I would, and it's a beautiful country you live in. I was married in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, so I know the area well. Yes, the precious metals market is going to get a little bit more volatile, and you want to buy on pullbacks. I think the $320 range is long gone. We're not going to see $320 gold anymore, but we are going to see some volatility. And I said that silver at $8, I didn't like. We didn't recommend it. We were trying to keep investors away from $8 silver, and I thought that it would pull back to around $610, $615, and it went below that even. But the gold market is very strong, somewhere in the neighborhood of $372, and I think that's a good $372 to $385 is a good area to start accumulating the metal. And I think we will break through $430 either just prior to the election or after the election. And this manipulation that we've seen is getting less and less. Those hedges from Barrick and a lot of the other companies out there are starting to unwind those positions. The investors in those companies want them to do so, and the shareholders, and they're actually doing it right now. And most of these companies that we're talking to want to continue that process over the next year to year and a half, which will be positive for the gold market. But I'm not going to tell you it won't be volatile. And we saw the same thing when gold went to $850 an ounce. We saw 30 and 40% pullbacks in the market, and I think we're going to continue to see them.
Well, you know, Bill, there's two fascinating things that have happened recently, and you're absolutely right. These are totally manipulated markets. And one of the big manipulators was the Rothschilds, who've controlled the gold markets for 200 years. And the meeting was always held at the Rothschild and Sons over there in London, and they set the gold market every day. Until recently, and they pulled out of setting the price. Now, the only reason you would do that is you don't want to be caught in a short position if the price is going to go up. Even more interesting is there's a corporation known as AIG that's been setting more or less the silver price for a long period of time, and you'd never guess what happened within the last week or two. AIG has dropped out of silver because they don't want to be in a short position, and I think that both the Rothschilds and AIG are telling us something. They know something that the average individual doesn't know yet, and that I think that the prices are going to go up. What are your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Well, I think so also. Again, I think that it's going to be volatile. There's a lot of emotion out there. I think there's mini bubbles in a lot of the areas with stocks, bonds, and real estate, and people are going to have a very confusing time trying to figure out which areas to invest their money into. And as soon as those interest rates start going up and we continue to see inflation, we're right back to the early 70s with interest rates exactly where we are basically right now, not quite as low, but early 60s. And then as you start to see the increase in interest rates, more and more of these people are going to look for a good, solid place for their money. And I think the precious metals market's going to pick up a large percentage a large percentage for the precious metals market. If it picked up a large percentage, it could be $8,000 an ounce. But a large percentage of those dollars in the metals market as a relative percentage, which is fairly small. I mean, 2-3% of the money coming out of the stock market could push gold up to $800 an ounce. But I think the manipulation that we've been hearing about is starting to subside a little bit, and these companies are unwinding those positions, and you're going to see more and more strength in the market over the next 6 to 9 months as we get closer to the election, as interest rates start to rise a little bit further.
And I don't think we're going to have these people that are going to be shorting, because every time you buy something, at least in the market-wise, you buy a long contract, somebody's got to sell a contract. If there's nobody there to sell, why, the price is going to go right on up. So let's go to anything else you want to ask, Bill?
Just real quickly to tag this question. Do you think the bottom line is that the line of demarcation has to be drawn with the stock market finally making a major downturn?
No, I don't think
so. As long as they're holding the stock market up, they seem to be able to hold the precious metals down.
I personally think it's going to be the real estate market. I think there's much more money in real estate than there is in stocks. Stocks just get it's like gambling. It's like Vegas with the stock market, so it gets all the glamour. But the real estate market is where the real big money is, and that's where a lot of the big people that we're speaking with and that I talk to in the seminars are starting to become a little bit more concerned about Alan Greenspan talking about having to raise interest rates a little bit quicker. I talked to one gentleman a couple of days ago. In the 30 years that he's been in the market, he's never lost a dime in real estate. He's very smart. He's been doing it a long time. Has over $600 million on the sideline because he believes the markets in real estate could come down. That's a much bigger market, and it affects darn near every one of us. 69% of the people in the United States own real estate, and the percentage is much smaller that own the stock in the market.
Well, just hang on to your hat, Bill. I think we're in for quite a ride.
Thank you so much.
But the important thing is to get out of debt, get prepared for what's going to happen, and then realize that in the final analysis, why our only real security is in the Lord. But it's up to us to do the best we can, and then, of course, realize that we're going to have to rely upon Him. We're going to be back here, and let's go to Dale, who's calling from Washington State. Hi, Dale. What part of Washington State are you in?
I live in between Okanagan and Twist.
Okay, good to have you with us.
North part of the state. Quick question. As long as oil prices and oil trade is denominated in dollars, the world has a stake in holding up the dollar. Do you see any move to change that status to switch to another currency in oil trades on the world market?
Oh, absolutely. We heard talk about it when Saddam was in power. I can't remember the exact number of ticked off Muslims. That what was that number, Stan?
1.25 billion.
Okay, that's a lot of people that aren't very happy with us right now, and I think they would love to switch over to the euro. And if they want to hurt us financially, that would be one fantastic way of doing it. You start denominating oil in euro and see what happens and how many more currencies start becoming denominated in euro, and that's a very real possibility. Matter of fact, we've been threatened in different ways through China last year in November, threatened to sell off some of our treasuries, and they're the second largest holder of treasuries in the world. They threatened to sell off some of them. So if a country wants to threaten us, there's a lot of different ways to do it. The oil countries can denominate in a different currency, and other countries can sell our debt. We're kind of in between a rock and a hard place, but I think it's very realistic that they could do that, and it wouldn't be hard to do.
Well, I think the thing that really frightens me is that an awful lot of countries hate America. And, you know, it's not the American people, but it's the policies of our government. And yet, of course, they reflect us, and we are responsible for what our government does. And if we antagonize the rest of the world, and they set out to disrupt us economically, we are very, very vulnerable.
Is the Saudi regime, are they the trump card in keeping the oil trade in dollars?
Well, I don't know if they're the trump card, but if they were overthrown, you've got some big problems. Even if we continue to denominate oil in the U.S. currency, we still have big problems. But I think if they were overthrown, whoever overthrew them would probably want to denominate it in the euro, because why would you want to get these people out of there unless it was to hurt the United States?
And I think, Roger, if you see what's happened in this last couple of weeks, why the State Department has told all of our American citizens living in Saudi Arabia to get out. And I think the British are pulling out their people. We're pulling out our people. Now, why would we do that? This has never happened before. We've had Americans in Saudi Arabia for 30 or 40 years, and they're telling them to get out because I think that they know that there's a very real chance that the Saudi regime will fall. And when it does, heaven help us all, because where are we going to get our oil? We'll either have to abide on the world market. We'll have to invade Saudi Arabia to secure the oil situation there. We're in extremely difficult position.
One more quick question, if I could.
Go ahead.
Do you see the dollar actually falling to any appreciable amount as long as the world is trading in dollars and oil?
Well, when you say appreciable amount, what would a scary number be to you?
Well, we've seen 40% against some other currencies. but it's been over a year's period of time, and we seem to have adjusted to that.
So are you asking, could we see another 40%?
Yes, I guess that's what I'm asking.
Well, we could see another 40%. Like I said, I don't know if you heard, there was a Merrill Lynch analyst, and I had it up on my screen here a second ago, but he's looking at a 10 to 15% drop in the value of the currency over the next 6 to 9 months. Is 10 to 15% scary? It is to me, after it already has fallen 40%, because you're looking at somewhere around, let's say, 45% net from its peak to its bottom. It's rallied a little bit, but I don't think this 0.25% interest rate increase is going to do anything for the dollar. It's already calculated in.
I think we're in real trouble. We're going to have to let you go because we're just about out of time. Right now, of course, Kevin, would you like to get your telephone number out just one more time? And what will they get if they contact you?
Sure. We have our free gold investor's guide. It's an area we feel will benefit from some of the things that we're talking about here, and our audio tape, Interest Rates and the Gold Boom Ahead. It not only talks about interest rates with gold, but it also talks about the stock market, the bond market, the real estate market, what some analysts are talking about, gives a good overview of what happens when interest rates go up and maybe some ways to take advantage of that. The number to call, and you can call now, there is some live operators standing by, is 1-800-214-8271. That's 1-800-214-8271. Mention Dr. Stan. This information and the tape is usually $29. We're going to give it away free tonight, but please mention that so that we can get it out free of charge, and it'll go out. I don't know if there's mail tomorrow with the holiday, but we'll get it out as soon as possible Monday or Tuesday of next week.
All right, fine. Thanks. And I just want to mention that this program is being heard on 7.535 shortwave. You can get our afternoon program, which is 3 to 5 Pacific, or 6 to 8 Eastern time at 9.430. And, of course, here at this frequency on shortwave, why you can hear after our afternoon program, which is 9.430, why you'll hear the Southwest Radio Church, they will be on this 7.535 and then Pastor Butch Paw. So listen in, and, of course, we just want to get all of the listeners we had before back online, and we want to help Southwest Radio Church and Pastor Butch Paw. Roger, we're just about out of time. Quick question or comment?
Yes, thank you. Very quickly, just an extension of what you said a couple minutes ago, and that is I heard what I take took place just in the last couple days to a week was a EU or other European office for the first time saying don't buy American T-bills.
Okay, fine. Thanks. I think we're on the verge of some terrible things. I really do. That's why I'm really spending more time now trying to get at least our listeners prepared for the difficult times I am convinced lie ahead. God bless. Thanks so much, Roger. Okay, fine. Well, thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate you being with us, and we'll look forward to having you with us in the not-too-distant future.
Dr. Stan, it's been a pleasure, and God bless all the listeners.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there will want to go to our website at radioliberty.com or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can help us by joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We'd be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter, and of course we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining us, joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and of course join us in this epic struggle to determine if this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. We talk about financial matters, and you have to prepare. But, of course, keep your faith in the Lord, because if the things happen that I fear will happen, that is the only thing that will sustain you. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them, because we have with us this evening our very special guest, Joel Skousen, a publisher of World Affairs Brief, and he's got an amazing story to tell us. We had him on earlier this week, and it was a great, great program, and I'm sure this one will be as well. And if you haven't been to his website, worldaffairsbrief.com. You want to go there right now. The first thing I do is, I never thought I would do this, but the first thing I do in the morning when I go to work is I look at my emails, and then I go to World Affairs Brief and see what things are that Joel has pulled down. Fascinating material, giving you an overview you're certainly not going to get elsewhere. In fact, I even went to the Drudge Report this morning, and it didn't even hold a candle to your report, Joel.
Well, thank you very much. My two researchers just do a wonderful job of beating the Drudge Report at the top stories, I think, that have the most political impact. And then I base my commentary on many of those stories each Friday. So it's it kind of gives readers a preview of what's coming and doesn't tell all the answers. I leave till Friday for that, and for shows like yours, where I'll be giving a preview of what we'll be covering tomorrow.
Okay, fine. Well, let's go for it.
Well, the, of course, important story of this past week has been the general alert that I put out is something coming bad coming in June. And there's a whole bunch of signs on the Internet that indicate that the government has foreknowledge, not only of, you know, some esoteric terrorist event, which they have warned everyone about, but that it may be more specific knowledge, and it may be worse than a simple terrorist event. I mean, we have a major military movement afoot. We have 10 of the 12 U.S. aircraft carriers have left port. And the only reason the other two haven't is that they are being refueled with nuclear material for their reactors, and they can't leave port right now. But this is an ominous sign, because the U.S. has never done this since World War II, put all the carriers out to sea at the same time. And normally, out of the 12 carriers, only three are out at any given time, and the rest are in rotations and refit and rehab and refuel and rest and relaxation and training and doing many of the other things that are required. But, you know, our supply lines have been stretched very, very thin through the Iraq war, so this is even more strange that you would put all these carrier attack groups out to sea, and this includes 10 to 12 support ships in addition. We're running fuel shortages in the United States, and now we're guzzling billions of more fuel with all of these carrier task forces being out to sea. Now, the government has said that this is routine, that this is part of Summer Pulse 04, training as readiness exercises that has been planned since last January. But new information that I've received from military content indicates that this isn't so. Even on the website of the USS George Washington, for example, there is a notice there about the cancellation of the Tiger Cruise. Now, a Tiger Cruise is an annual affair. It's a special affair that the USS George Washington does for children of sailors. A special fee involved, but they take children of sailors, they sign up and pay the special fee out on a cruise so that they can experience what it's like on an aircraft carrier. Now, this has to be very exciting, and was very disappointing when a letter came out on June 1st saying we've got to cancel. And they mentioned right there in the letter because of things which have come up in the past week. Now, you and I both know, Dr. Stan, that you wouldn't even have scheduled a cruise with all of the children of your sailors and got all that anticipation out if you knew as far back as January that you were going to be out on Summer Pulse 04 during the summer and in June. So this is clearly a a decision that was made fairly rapidly at the spur of the moment to take all of our military forces out of for some reason. Now, there are a lot of potential reasons of what I have analyzed in this week's World Affairs Brief. And the more obvious one, of course, is the government is warning about a terrorist attack. But they have warned about terrorist attacks every quarter of the year since 9/11, and none of those terrorist attacks have come true. They all fit the same pattern. We have lots of chatter. We're warning everyone. We're going to an orange alert. We have no specific information as to how, when, why, where, or by what methods.
And why would you have your fleet at sea if there's going to be a terrorist attack here locally, unless, of course, you were thinking that maybe terrorists were going to try to attack our fleet in dry dock or, you know, in port, which is a pretty hard thing to do.
Yes, it really is. I mean, you have to have some pretty big firepower to be able to attack military forces in the midst of these harbors like Norfolk, San Diego, Jacksonville, or Seattle. These things are very difficult to exit out of those areas if you decide to, you know, you can seal off those harbors. They all have very narrow exits into the ocean, or fairly narrow, and pretty easy to capture people. So I don't think that's the real reason. There are several reasons that have some relation to the overall general strategic threats that I've been warning about for several years. As you and I both suspect, the real axis of evil in life is Russia and China, who fully intend to attack the United States. They're full in preparation. As many people have asked me, you know, this seems to be very strange why Russia and China are very low on the radar screen, especially Russia. I mean, Russia is building the largest array of weapons of mass destruction of any nation on the face of the earth. China's trying. They're a globalist wannabe. And within 10 years, they're going to surpass Russia in terms of their weapons of mass destruction. But for now, Russia is the real country who's doing that, and all the American people can think about is how Russia is on its back and how it can't keep its army together and how it's a weak military and everything's corrupt and falling apart, and we're having to bail it out with millions of dollars of taxpayer money.
Billions of dollars. We gave them, at least we pledged $1 billion to help them do away with their chemical weapons while they're full-time production for war. Why do we have to give them money when they're building new nuclear submarines, when they're building new intercontinental ballistic missiles, nuclear-tipped, and they're targeted America? It really doesn't make sense. In fact, so much of what's going on really doesn't make any sense.
Well, certainly, you know, there are an awful lot of soft-thinking congressmen that can be talked into saving the environmental disaster that is all throughout the former Soviet Union. And this is, in fact, what Russia is doing. They're claiming we don't have the money to clean up all of our nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare mess from our old factories that are outdated. They've moved all their new factories into Yamantau Mountain underneath the earth where it's protected. They intend for these factories to survive a nuclear retaliation from the United States. But you know, it's very easy to get congressmen like Nunn and Lugar, who put together this famous bill of safeguard the world from nuclear proliferation and danger. They're the ones that have been spending millions of dollars each year to dismantle SS-18s. Of course, the American public is not being told that all the warheads are going back to Russia, and that Russia has built, or the U.S. has built, special state-of-the-art storage facilities for these nuclear weapons, and as soon as that storage facility was finished, the U.S. inspectors were told, thank you, but we don't need you anymore, and you can't come back in here. In other words, you can't come back and inspect what we're going to do with these warheads, whether they're going to refurbish them or send them off to be recycled. It's all off-limits now. So, as you know, I have suspected for a long time that the reason for keeping a low profile on Russia and not warning the American people about this, the most dangerous. I mean, here, look at all the effort we spent trying to drum up support to attack Iraq, claiming that they have these massive weapons of mass destruction. They ended up having hardly anything at all. And yet Russia has verifiable tons of weapons of mass destruction, building new ones, and we don't ever issue any warning at all. I mean, I suppose the American people are gullible enough to actually believe that they're building these for benign or defensive reasons. Why, then, was Iraq so dangerous? you know, or Iran. The U.S. is about ready to light a fire under the issue of Iran. They've gone under significant hiding of nuclear weapons, which has just been leaked by Debka.com from a report from the International Atomic Energy Commission. Their machinations towards hiding their nuclear weapons program far exceed what the Iraqis are doing. And so far the U.S. hasn't made made much of an issue of it at all. And part of that reason is because Russia is the prime backer of Iran. And so when you attack Iran, you attack, you know, an extension of Russia. Russia's become very expert at using China, North Korea, Iran, and India to front for their nuclear program, shipping nuclear weapons and material around the world. The U.S. is adept at using Israel to transfer military technology to other future predators like China. Israel has shifted U.S. sensitive military technology to China for years now.
But with American permission, correct?
Absolutely.
I mean, because so all of this is really to confuse the American people. The leaders know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want us common folks to know.
Well, and that's what's really interesting about the world situation is that it's very difficult for Americans who are raised to trust their government, who come from a patriotic background of the founding fathers, the Constitution, feeling like we have a legitimate rule of law, something backed by divine inspiration, which the Constitution was in large part originally. It's very hard for them to believe that a government who can fight a war on terrorism, fight a war on drugs, make the world safe for democracy, really is lying through their teeth about each of those goals, and in fact does just the opposite. In truth, they do both. You know, they do fight a war on drugs, but in general they are the largest importer of drugs through the CIA black budget operations. And they do the legitimate thing simply as a cover to make sure that they maintain legitimacy with the American people, much like the U.S. court system does from time to time enforce a quote from the Constitution when it facilitates their agenda and when it gives the illusion that they are following the Constitution. But in fact, it's very obvious from court precedent that they disregard, rewrite, and reinterpret the Constitution at will whenever they want. I've made the statement often that the Constitution is actually already dead and that it's only maintained as a pretense of legitimacy for government. As George Bush correctly said when he was asked what he would do if a piece of legislation came before him that was unconstitutional, he said, "How would I know it was constitutional?" And of course, you know, here's a man who's taken an oath to defend and protect the Constitution and admits that he wouldn't know what was constitutional or not. So it's a very sad state of affairs.
Well, you know, one of the things that really bothers me is that they're pulling Americans out of Saudi Arabia. The British are pulling their citizens out of Saudi Arabia. This has never happened before. We're seeing a situation where Saudi Arabia, at least potentially, could simply implode.
Well, that's right. You know, Saudi Arabia is very vulnerable, even though they've got a fairly potential, high potential military force of U.S. weapons that they built. They do not have top-notch pilot training or weapons training. That's one of the, you know, they've become rather a soft country because of all the influx of money that comes through oil over the years. But, you know, relative to this major military move, there are various potentials that I want to go back to. One, for example, is the potential that we've got this get out of Dodge symbol because the United States anticipates that you know, Russia and China may make their move and that we may have or be vulnerable during the month of June or July to a nuclear preemptive strike. I think it's premature for that, frankly. I don't feel that that's what's coming. I think China wants to take advantage of the 2008 Olympics just as Hitler did prior to striking the West. Certainly would lose a lot of goodwill and would get the games canceled if you made a move on Taiwan too early. But there's also the potential that the U.S. is ready to pin the blame on whatever future terrorist attack, and I suspect, as in 9/11, they had foreknowledge and allowed it to occur, and if they allow one to occur, they may have already picked the country that they're going to attack. They may be willing to pin it on Syria. You know, Syria, they've been slowly building the case, and it's a legitimate case that Syria is harboring almost every terrorist organization in the world in Damascus. What they're not saying, of course, is that it's all aided and abetted by Russian and Chinese technicians and intelligence that are backing these terrorist movements in the Middle East, ultimately intending to aim at Israel. But if they do intend to attack another country, they certainly have enough forces in these aircraft carriers that have been prepositioned. There's also the potential that they're out there, or a portion of these carrier forces, to deter Chinese from any mischief in the Straits of Taiwan. The Chinese have ongoing war games there in which they're planning and practicing.
Well, now, where are they going to deploy the aircraft carriers? Do we have any idea?
Yes, I'm just covering that in the brief that's coming out tomorrow, and I'll tell you exactly where they are now. I've done my homework on that question. So the USS Kitty Hawk has been traditionally stationed out in Japan. It is in the Pacific, out moving towards the China area. USS Enterprise is in the Atlantic Ocean, as is the John F. Kennedy. Now, those are unknown destinations, but military sources that I've talked to seem to indicate that they are headed for the Middle East. USS Nimitz is one of the few that is one of the two that's still in dry dock, having its reactor refueled, as is the Dwight D. Eisenhower. Carl Vinson just left for the Pacific and is in the, close to the United States in the Pacific Ocean, heading east. I suspect they're heading for the Taiwan area. Theodore Roosevelt's in the Atlantic, heading for the Middle East. Abraham Lincoln's in the Pacific. They left a week or so ago. George Washington is en route to the Arabian Gulf. They're the ones who had their Operation Tiger Cruise canceled. The John C. Stennis is in the Pacific. That would be three headed for the China area. And Harry S. Truman's in the Atlantic. So we have Ronald Reagan, USS Ronald Reagan, CVN 76, is on a port visit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So that's the only one in Latin America. So we have three headed for the Middle East, and we have one, two, three, four, five three headed for the Far East, and we have five headed for the Middle East. So my bets would be on there's more mischief involving the Middle East coming up.
And, of course, the firepower of one of these carrier groups is just devastating, you know, what 75 or more planes, and probably, they can just destroy just about anything with one of those planes.
And not to mention, you know, we have 10 to 12 support ships around them, not to mention some of the, many of the cruisers that we have with all the Tomahawk missiles and weapons on them, which are added to these forces. Now, I might also say that most of these forces left port understaffed and undermanned and without a full complement of armaments and parts. So there's going to be an awful lot of refitting and underway of trying to have weapons and systems catch up with those if there ever is a hot foreign policy scenario that they have to take on.
Well, you know, one of the things that really bothers me is that, you know, we're just running out of ammunition, we're running out of missiles, we're running out of just about everything, because we've used so much of it, you know, in recent years. There's going to have to be a massive disarmament or rearmament of our military if we're going to be effective in this world.
Absolutely true, yes.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back with our special guest this evening, Joel Skousen. So if you'll please hold your calls until Joel develops the ideas that you're going to be seeing in tomorrow's World Affairs Brief. And, when our stations all get back online, we'll tell you how you can get this this weekly email report, and I will tell you I read it from beginning to end every week. It's one of the two things I read every week when it comes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. So I'll pick up the story from there, Joel.
Well, going back to the threat scenario, there are a couple of indicators, economically as well, that the United States has foreknowledge of something to come. The Fed has been pumping up a large portion of M3, one of the three indicators of the money supply. There's M1, M2, and M3. And just as a quick review, M1 is money that can be spent. It's mostly, you know, bank account money to the common people. It includes cash, checking accounts, and now accounts. M2 consists of assets invested in short-term money market accounts and money market mutual funds. M2 actually is M1 plus these other things makes up M2. And M3 are the former plus big bank institutional deposits and money deposits, money market funds and cross-lending agreements among banks. So when M3 goes up, what it indicates is not a specific inflationary boost of the money supply as M1 and M2 would indicate. Those are the normal ones that you look at for inflationary indications of the money supply. But M3 indicates interaction between the big banks, the insiders, and what's particularly interesting about the various components of M3 is that most of them are really on a normal curve. They don't show any major increase. What really does show major increase are large time deposits to institutional banks, and they're just skyrocketing. $155 billion over the past 4 weeks. Last week, $46 billion up. Now, this is just incredible. Those are large numbers, Stan, even for this government. You know, talking about another puny $25 billion for the Iraq war that was authorized, and here you have $46 billion going to the banks. Why this bailout? Why the necessity? Well, one of the reasons may be that a terrorist event, of course, could easily destabilize the economy. The U.S. government, the Homeland Security, has a propensity to shut down major portions of the economy, whether it's the airline system or the transportation system. They may shut down the stock market. All of that has a very negative impact. And when you're dealing with as many derivatives as these big institutions are doing, derivatives are really bets on interest rate movements, for example. And these can be very volatile, and they need large sums of money to be able to cover those bets should interest rates rise catastrophically. And, of course, there's an indication I'm covering in tomorrow's World Affairs Brief about the PPI, the Producers Price Index. This is one of the key indexes that stock market watchers watch. And what's really interesting is that for the first time in the history of the PPI, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is puts out our notoriously understated Consumer Price Index, that's an index that's easy to manipulate. They have this typical breadbasket, and they end up, whenever something gets high in inflation, they take it out of the basket and replace it with something else that isn't going up so fast. Or if it's fuel, they talk them out of saying, well, not everybody drives an SUV, so we'll just count it as if the average American has a General Motors Metro or something. But in the PPI, this is the Producers Price Index. This is, as I mentioned a couple of briefs ago, everything in the commodity market is going sky high, the basic raw materials that all industry is having to purchase. So now we have this official BLS announcement saying, and I quote, the Producer Price Index for May 2004, originally scheduled for release on June 11th, has been postponed indefinitely.
Hold that thought for just a moment there, Joel, and we'll get right back to this. Okay, Dr. Stan back here, and of course, Joel is just saying he's concerned perhaps the Fed is putting out a phenomenal amount of money. They put out something like $156 billion of money being advanced to the banks over the last 4 weeks, a phenomenal amount of money. And then he points out that price indexes they've announced it's going to be delayed indefinitely. Was that the wholesale price index, or which one was that?
Producers price index.
Okay.
This is the price of commodities that producers and manufacturers are having to pay. It's a key indicator of inflation that will be coming and showing up in consumer prices 2 or 3 months down the line.
Well, now, why would they just put this off indefinitely? Is it possible that they don't want the American people to realize that the inflation rate is not 4% like they're trying to tell us, but closer to 8 or 9%?
Precisely. BLS staff, this is still from quoting from their announcement, BLS staff is working to resolve the unexpected difficulties in calculating the index this month. Well, I mean, this is not rocket science. This is simply taking the data that comes in from producers and just throwing it into the index. I mean, there are no calculations involved except for the fact that they have to do a few seasonal adjustments, et cetera. But there's nothing new that hasn't been done time and again, and this is simply more verbiage saying we're having difficulties in calculating, meaning difficulties in skewing the record and changing it so it won't show what it's showing. The U.S. is desperate to keep inflation from showing its ugly head because they know what a rising interest rates will do. It will kill the real estate market. It's going to kill the bond market. And it's going to really hurt the derivatives market. And that's where most of these banks, including Chase Manhattan, which has trillions of dollars in derivatives, is really at risk. So there's also an indication, for example, one of the watchers was talking about the put-call ratio in the Chicago Board of Exchange. This is where you deal in futures options. People make futures bets on the price of stocks, either going up or down. They make a call. A call is a bet that a stock price is going to go up, and they promise to buy a stock at a higher price. A put is a promise to buy a stock at a lower price. If it doesn't get to that price, you're out the amount of money that you bet on. You don't actually have to go through and buy the stock. But there have been a tremendously much higher ratio of puts to calls now in the past week or so. And that means some big institutional investor is really betting that the stock market or something is going to destabilize the markets in the month of June, and they're betting on the negative there.
Well, of course, this is what happened just before the 9/11 attack, when the people were buying puts on American Airlines stock, United Airlines stock, J.P. Morgan, both in the United States and in Europe. And, of course, it was very obvious somebody knew something was going to happen.
That's right. Now, the other scenario that we have to discuss relative to this general warning in June are the various scenarios, and there's some very weird things happening in terms of extraterrestrial celestial objects, supposedly coming into the atmosphere and causing meteorite forms of explosion that had never happened before. I'll first start off with this very interesting ham radio operator who recorded a sensitive transmission from a military radio net called Snowball. And I quote, he said, "Snowball net, comm check, all stations, clock sync," that means synchronize your clocks, "impact at minus 146 days, 5 hours UTC." Apparently this happened back in January. And what this is based, Snowball, apparently according to military sources, is a net that does track and give warning to military bases on potential impacts from asteroids or comets. Snowball was interrupted by one of their members named, codenamed Burrow, saying, "Snowball, this is Burrow, you are not secure, repeat, not secure, go green, go green." Now, green refers to wait for a green light on your encoding equipment so that it goes out in a coded burst of data, and that's what followed that. So, many net watchers are very concerned that the government may be tracking some large object which may impact the Earth, and that's why all the carriers have left port. I'm really a little skeptical of that reason for the carriers. The carriers are enclosed in harbors that are quite resistant to tsunamis that might be caused from an impact in the ocean. And certainly they're, immune from anything that happens on land as well. But I'll talk about some of the meteor sightings and what's wrong with those meteor sightings when we get back from the break.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest this evening is Joel Skousen. We're talking about some of the strange things going along with the fact that they put the fleet to sea. And in June, why would they do it? Obviously on some sort of an emergency basis. And, of course, they're claiming it's been planned for a long time, and the evidence shows that it hasn't. Something big is afoot, and we'll be talking more about that in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen. Joel, you were going to tell us a little bit more about some of these asteroid or comet sightings?
Yes. A couple of things have occurred in the northwest around the Seattle area, which have been very strange. First of all, and they're all claiming that these are meteors, and yet there are two things that are very strange. One, a large bolt of light, like almost a lightning bolt, and accompanied by a large explosion. Now, I've seen hundreds of meteor showers in my life, and I'm sure you have before, too, and you have a streak of light coming through. You don't ever, as far as I can ever remember in, from my youth on, ever heard an explosion associated with that. And there have been surveillance cameras that have been on the Internet that have shown what it's like, and it's almost like daylight when that happens. I don't think you've ever seen daylight-type brightness from a meteor streaking across the sky.
Never.
Nor an explosion. And although some of the witnesses have seen a streak across the sky, the flash of light, and this is what was interesting on one of the video camera films that I saw, you clearly could see the streak coming across the sky, but it was not getting brighter, and all of a sudden the whole parking lot became bright, you know, like a lightning flash. And a big explosion, you know, accompanied that. And we just got news that a similar thing happened in New Zealand today. A meteor entering the Earth's atmosphere is the most likely explanation they're all giving, of course, for a bright light in a large bang that woke people over Wairoa in New Zealand. People reported what was sounding like an explosion at 4:30 a.m. in Kotea Maori. This is south of Wairoa in the Waikaremoa Island, and the reports from these explosion sounds have come as far apart as 75 kilometers apart. So that means it's, you know, as one commentator put, one hell of an explosion. So there was also accompanied by what was seen was a bright light filling the whole sky, much brighter than lightning. Now, let me explain something here. They're trying to explain, astronomers, as they're asked about this, of what could possibly cause the explosion. They're talking about the meteor breaking up in the atmosphere and exploding. But, you know, why hasn't that occurred before? And, and you know, each of these reports, both in Seattle and New Zealand, have reported there's been no indication of any craters. There's been no meteor found impacting the Earth. But I did get a call from a Boeing engineer this week, and he said, you know, when I was in Colorado Springs on duty for Boeing...
Hold that thought for just a minute, because we want to bring our stations back online with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is Joel Skousen. He's talking about some strange things that have happened. There have been reports in the Seattle area and then down in New Zealand of something. People are saying it's a meteor streaking across the sky, and then suddenly there's a bright light, and then there is an explosion. Now, we've all seen shooting stars, meteors entering, and I've never seen everything light up, and I've certainly never heard an explosion. There's Joel, but he's trying to explain this, and he was telling us just before we got our listeners back that somebody from Boeing, an engineer, had called him. And what's the story there, Joel?
He said that in Colorado Springs, he happened to be privy to a test that was being run between Boeing and Lockheed Martin, who runs, they were developing and still are developing an airplane-mounted laser beam designed to shoot down incoming warheads. And he said when that test went off, there was a huge light filling the whole sky, filled up and brightened the whole parking lot, just like what we're describing here, with a large boom upon impact. And so he feels like what's happening both here and in New Zealand is that we've got testing of black budget weapons, that the meteor story is the cover story. They may well be testing the ability of to disarm people about things. The government's gotten very good about trying to dissuade people about what they really see and tell them it means something other than what they saw, such as in TW-800 when they told hundreds of people who saw missiles going up, well, you mistakenly thought what was going up was actually coming down. And, it was fire coming down from the exploded fuel tank, not a missile trail going up. And people just shake their heads, telling me, military people, that We can't tell the difference between a missile. And, of course, how do you explain the horizontal missile that was going across Long Island with a white puff of smoke out of it, not an orange one? That doesn't, match with the fuel streaming down from the sky scenario. But in any case, our government's getting very, very loose with the truth and very egregious about throwing out cover stories. I suspect that's what we're seeing here, too.
All right, that's a fascinating thing to contemplate. And, of course, we've known that for a long time they have been working on these laser weapons. You know, they're terribly, terribly lethal, and this certainly would be a much more efficient means of accomplishing what we need to accomplish would be space-based lasers, even though, of course, we've signed all sorts of treaties saying we wouldn't do it. Would anybody think that we wouldn't do it?
Now, there's one other possibility about all of this. The U.S. often does pull surprise exercises to test the response of Russia and China through their satellite intelligence network. In other words, if they pull all the ports, the carriers out of port, they may well be listening in very closely to see how Russia and China react to this move. It helps them test to see what would be the forerunner of a very quick maneuver by Russia and China to attack the United States. So there's all kinds of possibilities here. We really need to be aware, though, when you have so many of these types of things coming out and you have the government giving private companies, for example, and people in state governments private warnings about not traveling during certain times during the summer, they may have stronger knowledge about something than they're letting on.
What?
And certainly, I will say this, if we do have, and I am expecting another high-profile terrorist attack. Certainly the government can't keep crying wolf without producing some kind of terrorist attack. If one happens and they already have a country picked out and they can blame it within a day of that attack, as I suspect they're going to do, as they did with Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, then I'll know that this was another pre-planned attack, especially if they have carriers pre-positioned to start to attack Syria. I think Syria would be a very, very good candidate or elimination if we have another high-profile terrorist attack.
Well, that's exactly what William Crystal said when he was being interviewed by Ted Koppelman. We still have the text of that, and Ted Koppelman was talking to William Crystal, who is, of course, the director of Project for the New American Century, to which Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Perle and of course, John Bolton and Liddy and this clique that really runs the government belong. And William Crystal was quite open about it. Syria, Lebanon, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, and certainly North Korea as well. I mean, he didn't hesitate at all to say, we're going to take them all out, in essence.
And, of course, no one really believes, frankly, that the U.S. would be serious about trying to take them all out, because there are just a lot of Muslim people out there, and I just doubt they'd take all that lying down. The United States, I predict, continues this juggernaut of antagonizing the rest of the world. At some point, Russia will intervene, and the U.S. will be attacked for the first time in history by a country who will say, in essence, somebody had to stop the bully of the world from rampaging around. Now, certainly right now, Putin is playing right along with Bush at the G8 summit in Sea Island in Georgia. They were, very palsy-wowsy again, and Putin was saying, criticizing the Democrats and defending Bush and pretending like he was his good friend. So all seems well now as they cover for each other, predators that they are.
Well, of course, if we start going after Syria, if we start going after Iran, this will really inflame the Muslims of the rest of the world. This is my fear. And I think everything we're doing is almost like it's predetermined and designed to inflame the Muslims of the world.
Yes, and that's my theory, that the whole Balkans trumped-up operation in Kosovo, as well as these wars against the Muslims, are meant to create antagonism to set the stage for World War III, where we will be the victims, we will be attacked. All of this will, of course, lend to the globalist justification for removing national sovereignty, the supposed excuse for this world war and replacing it, of course, for the new world order.
But after all, what is the solution other than a world government? Because otherwise men are going to continue fighting and slaughtering one another. And wouldn't a world government solve the problem? And I'd like to suggest it wouldn't. I mean, how would you like to have a world government headed by someone like Adolf Hitler or Benito Mussolini or Joseph Stalin or Chairman Mao? And how could you be sure that the most ruthless person wouldn't actually get to be in charge of it? Or maybe...
Well, we know the track record of UN organizations and their corruption. We know, for example, that the International Court of Justice now is run by a Chinese communist. He's the head of that. We know that the military head of the United Nations forces on the council level has always been a Russian. That's why during the Korean War, of course, the Russians were privy to everything that our UN operation did in Korea. General MacArthur complained about that bitterly.
And, of course, the person in charge of NATO is a man named Javier Solano, a lifelong Marxist. So,
that's correct.
Right.
Yes, Javier Solano is a true... he's part of the Socialist International,
right.
The communist faction of the New World Order, or those that are attempting to take control of the New World Order. I think it's important to understand that Iran is just bending over backwards right now to keep from being attacked. Debka.com occasionally comes out with some very interesting intelligence, which Gyor Shamis, I'm sorry, the head of Debka, told me personally, you know, that all his sources are government intelligence people. But he does come out with some real good stuff occasionally, and this time he got a leak from a report that's yet to be released from the International Atomic Energy Commission, a report on Iranian concealment efforts. It's a rather dramatic report, Dr. Stan. Here's what he says. He says, when the Atomic Energy agencies went back in February, they were astonished to find empty spaces at the very places the nuclear installations that they had visited before. When they questioned their Iranian escorts, they were greeted with blank stares. What installations, the officials asked. The inspectors pulled out photographs from previous visits, showed the Iranians what had been there before. The Iranians dismissed them as having been shot at other places that looked similar. And when the inspectors persevered and reported the existence of aerial photos showing the exact locations of the missing facilities, the Iranians just shrugged their shoulders. They have planted over and put gardens and fresh flower beds in some of the places where they had these buildings before to make them appear as if they didn't exist.
I'm reading a fascinating book written back in 1993, written by Joseph Badansky, and I know you have some differences with him. He's the director of the House Republican Task Force on Terrorism and Conventional Warfare, but he's writing this book in 1993, quoting the Ayatollahs of various ones that were there back in 1980 when the CIA toppled the Shah and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. But they were basically saying, we're going to have to destroy the world and the world order. This is the only way that Islam is going to be able to progress. If we don't destroy them, the world order, they're going to destroy us. So these are not nice people.
Well, one of my questions about Budansky is he does tend to justify the establishment line about the legitimacy of independent terrorism, and I question the legitimacy of that concept. It appears to me that almost all terrorist organizations are government-sponsored, including our own, and for Hegelian purposes of creating conflict. I'm very, very suspicious about all governments claim to have a hands-off relationship with terrorists, as if they are somehow getting all these weapons of mass destruction on their own through corrupt ex- or post-Soviet officials. That's, of course, been the big disinformation about suitcase nuclear weapons. Frankly, these are the crown jewels of Russia and the U.S. in terms of nuclear weapons, and they're not about to let these things slip out of their grasp. In any case, moving on to Iraq, Dr. Stan, it's very interesting, the sleight-of-hand maneuvers that are going on about the choosing of the new interim Iraqi government. After having exercised its first and only prerogative in appearing to assert its will against Paul Bremer, the U.S. hand-picked Iraqi Governing Council forced its choice of successors upon Lakhmar Brahimi, the UN envoy, that was supposed to choose people who were not part of the Iraqi Governing Council. So this, the whole news last week was about how the Iraqi Governing Council finally got some gumption and defied its occupiers and insisted that these be their choices.
Wasn't the guy that they chose a fellow who's been aligned with the CIA for years?
Yes.
By coincidence, right?
You know, Prime Minister designate Ayad Dalawi has been the head of an Iraqi dissident organization out of London, CIA funded for years. The Iraqi National Accord is what it's called. But now we find out from the Daily Telegraph in the UK that certain CIA agents have leaked the story that he, in fact, ran CIA operations, sabotage, bombings, car bombings, trying to overthrow Saddam Hussein. So he was very, very active for the CIA. This is a very key lackey for the United States.
And this is what we call the independent government.
That's right. But it's interesting because it didn't take long before for the world to see that these new chosen leaders were outright puppets, almost as if they were quoting, you know, a favored U.S. script. They assured Iraqis that a continued U.S. presence was both necessary and desirable. You know, you remember a couple of weeks ago when the U.S. said, "Now, we swear that if the interim government asks us to leave, we'll leave." Of course, that was kind of a hollow promise. These people come out immediately and assure the world that the U.S. is welcome, and in fact, they can't leave because we would have civil war if they left. This week, Prime Minister designate Alawi went even further, perpetuating the grand myth of forthcoming Iraqi sovereignty. Now, this is the great joke that no one's really blowing the whistle on, is President Bush's promise that at the end of June 30th, that Iraq will have full sovereignty. This is a man who doesn't know the meaning of the word, what's constitutional, let alone what full sovereignty is, apparently. In 3 weeks, he said, this is the Prime Minister designate, we will be a sovereign nation. I mean, this is just propaganda. He was saying this in the aftermath of the recent fuel pipeline attack, leading to a major power generating station going offline. He says, we owe it to future generations to leave this land better, stronger, and more independent than before. By working to defeat these saboteurs, we can accomplish this goal in a sovereign Iraq. So there's two times in two sentences that he puts forth the sovereignty issue. I mean, this is just, couldn't be more pleasing to the U.S. And of course, the U.S. Played like this wasn't their choice, that the Iraqi Governing Council was exceeding their authority. And interestingly enough, the Iraqi Governing Council immediately dissolved itself after the naming of these two individuals, and incidentally, there's 30 other people that are going to be part of this interim government, half of which are now going to be from the former Iraqi Governing Council. So by dissolving themselves, they make themselves eligible to join the new government, which they help choose. This is really, you know, a round-robin revolving door organization that is still fully controlled and allied with the U.S. occupation.
Well, I'm sure the Iraqi people can see that. I'm sure that they really don't trust us. I'm sure that they would like to get rid of the American forces and be able to establish their own government, and there's just no way we're going to give them an opportunity to do that.
Well, you know, frankly, I think a little more realistic point of view, Dr. Stan, is that Iraqis are no different than Americans. You have some people that are savvy, a few people that are savvy, know what's going on. You have a lot of people who just follow the crowd and are resentful. You have a lot of people who follow the crowd and want to be like the United States, want to have a secular, you know, free government and just, you know, blind to the U.S. faults. There are a lot of people who do want the U.S. occupation there. And so, you know, there really isn't any such thing as the Iraqi mind. It's really a composite of many different, a few intelligent and mostly followers, people manipulated by their own news and ethnic cultural backgrounds.
So what's going to happen?
Well, frankly, I think we're going to see an increase in violence. Of course, this will play right into the U.S. hands. They're building 14 new military bases. You're not going to spend that kind of money in Iraq if you're intending to leave anytime soon. The U.S., incredibly, is promising to be out by the end of next year. And there's just no way. I mean, I can guarantee you that the U.S. is laughing behind their back and chuckling about making these kind of promises, knowing that they're not going to do so. And why won't they do so? There's going to be another war in the Middle East. There's going to be another huge increase in insurgency, and the people will forget all about the U.S. leaving by the end of 2005. And obviously they've got a little caveat in that statement with the U.N. resolution, as long as the political objectives are achieved. And they certainly won't be achieved if there's a major outbreak of violence. And the Iraqi interim government will have very few powers to curtail that. I think it's a recipe for continued U.S. intervention.
I feel you're right, and I feel so sorry for the Iraqi people. I feel so sorry for our young men. I feel so sorry for the young men who signed up for specific tour of duty, and they're ready to come home, and they said, sorry, we've changed the rules. You're going to have to stay and fight, and you may die. But, you know, we make the rules. You signed on. We signed on for a specific time, and now everything's changed. I don't know. I mean, this would be totally demoralizing if I was in the military. I would want to be able to trust the people, you know, in my government, and suddenly my government has lied to me.
You know, what's really interesting, the U.S. continues to manipulate the re-signing up and retention rate of soldiers. They keep saying, they don't ever tell us what percentage are actually staying. They just say the U.S. is making their goals, their recruitment goals. Well, their recruitment goals could be 50% lower for all we know. You know, it's like the stock market analysts. They always tell us, well, the stock market went down this day, even though that analyst assessment of Intel were slightly higher than what was expected. Well, that doesn't tell us anything. It's a very manipulated way of judging things to say it's lower or higher than what they expected. What does that have to do with anything in reality? So they're also not telling us that they're giving huge bonuses to these people, like $8,000 to $10,000 to stay in the military service. So they're buying people's allegiance, and that's very easy to do, and when there's very few job markets waiting for people. So the people that are getting out really are disgusted when you are turning down $10,000 to $12,000 in re-upping bonuses to leave the service. But there's a lot of people who really have seen too much there and are leaving.
Well, I feel it's just going to be a quagmire, and I feel it's just going to be increasingly divisive for our own people. And, of course, people are going to become disillusioned and discouraged, and, you know, and, of course, it's going to turn people against America, which I think is perhaps one of the things that they really want. And you turn against America, where do you look? Well, maybe world government is the way to go. At least many of them will believe that, and I really hope that doesn't happen, because that's not the solution. But, you know, out of this chaos will come order sooner or later, and I fear what that order will bring.
I think that's very true, Dr. Stan.
Well, we're just about out of time. We've got just a couple of minutes more. What the thoughts? First of all, we forgot to tell people how to get the World Affairs Brief. Let's be sure to tell them that, and then, of course, we'll let you go.
Well, the World Affairs Brief is my weekly news analysis service. It's showcased on www.worldaffairsbrief.com, all written as one word. You can subscribe right online. There's a modest fee for all 52 issues by email. There's also a print edition available for those that don't have access to the net. You can get free copies of the World Affairs Brief by calling toll-free 877-518-5888. That's courtesy of Midas Resources, who put out hard copies for people who don't have access to the web.
Well, I can assure our listeners that it's well worthwhile reading. Joel always has a very amazing way of taking stories and analyzing them and making things that don't seem to make any sense make sense. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. As always, it's been a real pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Likewise, a pleasure for me.
Good night. God bless. We'll be talking to you probably next week.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye. All right. Fine. Well, that's Joel Skousen, and certainly he's one of my favorite guests, and I certainly hope he's one of your favorite guests as well. And, well, just had a little trouble there. I'll see if I can get our producer to bring a little water in here. But right now, we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're primarily dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs, who believe in what we're doing, to help us on a regular basis as we reach out across America by radio, by shortwave, by internet, by satellite, Now, of course, I knew shortwave frequencies here for this program, 7.535. Our earlier program is 9.430. That's 9.430. And, of course, I remember that before we come on in the evening on this frequency, 7.535, you can pick up Pastor Butch Paugh, you can pick up Pastor Noah Hutchings, and then, of course, you go before that from 3 to 5 Pacific, from 6 to 8 Eastern, why you'll get us on 9.430. So please tell people about our shortwave frequencies. Tell them about our Internet. And after all, if you are listening on the radio and you have access to a computer, you can actually listen to Radio Liberty 5 hours a day at www.radioliberty.com. And we're on the American Freedom Network early in the morning, and then the Genesis Network in the afternoon, and then, of course, the Radio Liberty Network in the evening. On the Internet, of course, there's all sorts of archive programs up there. There are certainly my newsletters going back many years, and you are welcome to pull them down. You can always get them from us in bound fashion, but it's a lot nicer, I think, to actually you can pull them down off the Internet at no cost. You have our permission to copy them. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get some of the videos that we have, like They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, a four-hour fascinating video where you hear Timothy Leary explaining that the whole drug scene came about because of Aleister Crowley, and understanding who Aleister Crowley was. He was a Satanist, because behind everything that's going on today, there are powerful spiritual and demonic forces. And if you don't believe that, you really want to see this video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You want to, of course, see our or listen to our four-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends, the new video we carry, Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, Diaprax in the Church, the story of the church growth movement that is leading America into a great apostasy. Certainly my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, or The Best Enemies Money Can Buy, or Population Control, have a great new video out now. It's called Iraq, The Road to World War III. That's Iraq, The Road to World War III. And then, of course, our classic Iraq, The Untold Story, which goes into the fact that all of the wars of the last century were fought to further the New World Order. We were involved in World War I to bring about the League of Nations, the war to end all wars, the war to make the world safer democracy. The boys who went over there thought they were fighting against the wicked Huns. No, they were fighting a war ready to kill as many human beings as possible, a long and hard and terrible and prolonged bloody war, and its purpose was to so discourage people they'd be willing to give up their sovereignty, give up their freedom, and accept a world government. And that the same story of the Second World War. They prolonged the Second World War. If you get our syllabus on Iraq, The Untold Story, you'll actually see the article out of the Chicago Tribune that was put out on the day that they signed the peace treaty in the harbor in Tokyo, there in Japan, where they talk about how, of course, the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months, and we wouldn't let them in, and the invasion of Okinawa and of Iwo Jima, and the dropping of the bombs. Totally unnecessary. We wouldn't let them surrender, because there are people out there who want human suffering. And until you understand the evil that we face, it's very difficult to understand so much of what's going on today. So we ask you at this point to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers. Please remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Call if you'd like a copy of our newsletter, and then pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, until tomorrow at the same time. May the Lord be with you.